Welcome to Bina, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of Bina, our guest is journalist, author, and television host Joan London, whose new book is Why Did I Come Into This Room? A Candid Conversation About Aging. She's joined in conversation by journalist Holly Furfer. And now join Joan London and Holly Furfer.
Welcome. We're so excited to have you here. I'm Holly Furfer with CNN. I am so excited to welcome you to what promises to be a very funny, enlightening book fest in your living room. I just got to meet her a short while ago. Joan London might now be my favorite person in the universe. Honestly, this is going to be a great night discussing her new book, Why Did I Come Into This Room? A Candid Conversation About Aging. She's a best-selling author, a motivational speaker, a woman's health and wellness advocate. She has been a trusted voice in American homes for more than 30 years. We all woke up to her. We all love her. And nearly two decades, Joan greeted viewers every morning on Good Morning America. She's the longest running female host ever on early morning television. She reported from 26 countries, covered five presidents, five Olympics, and kept Americans up to date on how we care for our homes, our families, our health. So with all of that, she's written another book. She has 482 children, teenagers at home. It's amazing. No wonder she stays young, but please welcome our very special guest, Ms. Joan London.
Well, hello.
Good to see you.
You know, I always say that it doesn't make any difference how many presidents I've covered. It's always the seven kids that get the applause.
I love it. Okay. So first of all, this book, because we're talking about aging, you have done so much for the wellness and aging community. So tell us what is in this book? Tell us about this book.
Well, you know, it's funny because I wrote my first book. The first one I wrote was Good Morning, I'm Joan London. But then I wrote A Healthy Cooking and Healthy Living. And that's when I went through this like transformation. As I was turning 40 years old, I was actually turning 39. And I remember I saw a magazine cover and it had, you know, Farrah Fawcett, it had all the Charlie's Angels. That tells you how long ago it was. And it said, fit, fabulous, and 40. And I thought, I want to be that. But I just had three children. Now those girls are all in their 30s and they're all married and have kids. And I took it upon myself. I said, if in 30, 40 years, I want to still be running in the race and not just watching the race from the sidelines, I got to like change my life. And I spent 1 year between 39 and 40. And I literally changed myself. And it's not just that I lost the weight from having three children, you know, over a decade and never really losing those last, you know, 5-10 pounds or 15, whatever.
Right.
It was. But it wasn't just that. It was learning to honor my body, learning to eat healthy. It was adding activity back in my life, not just working out. I think you have to add something back in that's fun, that you look forward to doing. And so, I mean, I really think it changed the trajectory of my life. You know, I ended up remarrying. And, you know, I always say when I was 29 years old, I got married and I married a guy who was 39. And it didn't work out. Three great kids. But 20 years later, when I was 49, I got married again. And again, I married a guy who was 39. The second 39-year-old worked out much better. I really just changed my life. And so, you know, after writing my first couple books that were very authentic and honest about, you know, the struggle of losing weight and everything, they were both bestsellers. So now a publisher comes to you and says, write another book. And I went to my book agent and I said, what am I going to write about next? Because you always feel like you squeezed every last thought out of your brain when you finish a book. And he looked at me and he said, "You will always write about that which you want to know more about." And he was so right. When I left Good Morning America, I wrote A Bend in the Road is Not the End of the Road, a book about change. When I was going through my cancer journey, I wrote Had I Known, all about my cancer journey. When I was just, we were just about to have the first set of twins, and I wrote Growing Up Healthy. So here I sat at my computer with this book I'd been working on for quite a long time, years. I actually put it aside when I was diagnosed with cancer to write Had I Known. But I hadn't really, you have to understand, what do I want to share with the world? Like, what's my purpose in doing this? And I just felt like for women, we experience all these different things that happen as we go through the decades and we age. And we age differently than men because we have estrogen. When that estrogen starts to plummet, we experience all these things that when they start to happen to you, your waistline, like you look down and say, "Swear to God, I did not eat more Tostitos last year. Like, what happened?" And all of a sudden, it's hard to go to sleep. And you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't lose the weight as much. And you're getting hot flashes. You got a leaky bladder, like all these things. And when these things start to happen to a woman, I think that if you're not allowed to like openly discuss it, that you think something's kind of wrong with you. Like, right. I'm breaking down. Like, what's wrong? Is this a medical problem? But they're embarrassing things. They're annoying and they're embarrassing. So women tend not even to talk to doctors about them, but they're also really worrisome. And you can really get stressed out and you start to feel maybe not as appealing, not as sexy, and pretty soon it's not as relevant. And that's a terrible path to go down for as a woman. So I wanted to throw it all out there. Like, no subject was off limits in this book.
You're not lying when you say
absolutely
that.
Absolutely everything. And I even added in a few new words to your vocabulary, like peasing.
Yeah.
Yes. That's sneezing and peeing at the same time, because we're all multitaskers, right?
It all happens.
So I wanted it to be about all those things that happen to us and let women understand why they're happening, what's going on, why they're happening. And then like lots of good takeaway about things you can do about it. But I also wanted it to be not just about our body. And that's why I did mind, body, and soul. I wanted it to also to be about us, you know, because I think that we have pivot points as we grow older. And some of them are actually, I think, really good pivot points. I think, what's that old saying, with age comes wisdom? I think it's true. I really do. Yeah. But I knew I would have to do it with humor.
Yes, you do. Because it sounds, I read this book and I felt like we were having a conversation. Like, I knew you. And it's because these are things that I say to my girlfriends. These are things that I will discuss sometimes with my mom. And I it's just so down to earth and real. One of the things that I love that you talk about very early on in the book is, as you say, the statement, "I look good for my age." And you say, we don't say that.
Don't you hate that qualifier?
Right, right.
Well, you know that I opened the book with a story, with the chapter called "How Old Would You Be If You Didn't Know How Old You Were?" And they say that everyone has a number in their head. Because when you think of yourself, you have to think of yourself as an age. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's 45. I got off the age train at 45. And I was like at my peak in 45. So when I'm thinking of myself as 45, it's like, yes, you know, like, this is awesome. I'm going to go out there and kill it. But I think it's really important. It's not just only how much you're working out and how clean you're eating. It's your attitude. It's your concept of yourself. And, you know, we're so married to this idea of our age, that number on that birth certificate, and now the number on the age on your driver's license. And I don't think it's so good for us. I think that it limits us, you know, because people will say, "Oh, well, you know, I'm 61 now, so I really can't do blah, blah, blah anymore. Oh, I'm 65. I guess they consider me retired." Like, what?
Right.
We're living in today's day and age. I mean, a lot of my friends that are all in their 60s, I mean, feel like they're kind of at their peak.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned use by date. Like you feel like we have a use by date, but why should we? Because we're still here.
Yeah. And you only have a use by date if you think that there is a use by date. And the problem is, as most of us were growing up, and I don't know whether we're doing that. I might be doing that to my kids for all I know. But as you grow up and you're a child, you're always hearing things like, oh, help Uncle Charlie out of the chair. You know, he's retired now. He can't help him out of the chair. Don't walk that fast. Aunt Harriet, you know, she's getting older. So you keep hearing these things. So you have this idea in your head that as you age, you decline and you deteriorate. And it's one of the worst self-fulfilling prophecies that you can imagine. It's a horrible thought process, but it's like recordings of hundreds and hundreds of hours of what we've heard over our lifetime that are kind of like running back there. And you just have to like shut it out and say, not in this world.
not me. And you lived that because of Glitzy Gladys. Talk about your mom. Oh. You actually saw that firsthand.
Yeah. My mom was like a, you know, it's funny. One day I threw a huge 75th birthday party for her. And some of the people that got up, I remember one gentleman said, Glitzy Gladdy, because everyone called her Glitzy Gladdy. She loved gold lame, cowboy boots, gold lame, anything trimmed in gold. But she had this effusive smile all the time. It's like I lived with the guru of positive thinking. You know, and like I say, some of my friends think I must have been raised by the Dalai Lama, but it was really my mom. But one guy said, Gladys like a shooting star. Even after she's left the room, that effervescence is still there. You still feel her positiveness. And she was like the ultimate glass half full girl. And I'm a glass half full girl, like all the way.
You think?
Yeah, I am. Absolutely. And I learned that from her. It's like the best things she ever taught me. And she, the little things that you realize after an adult that was so good.
But you actually, a big part of this book, and I think a big part of the impetus of this book is how you talked about how you saw your mom change when she wasn't as active. So you physically saw that change.
I watched her check out.
Yeah.
And you know, the only regret I have in life is that when she was getting older and I was taking care of her and I was also taking care of my brother. My brother had type 2 diabetes and had it for his whole life. And he was a smoker and it just, you know, it's a bad combination and he really couldn't work. And so I had always taken care of them. Finally, I got smart and I said, I'm putting them in the same condo. No, one TV bill, one electricity bill. So I had them together and it was working out. But, you know, my brother got he just got weaker and sicker all the time. And so my mom kind of became a recluse. Like he hardly ever came out of his room. And isolation, you know, we all know isolation is not good for you. But these are the little things I learned in researching the book. Experts will tell you that isolation is as damaging to your body as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I never knew that it was that bad, but I should have because I watched what happened to my mom. My mom just kind of checked out of life. She wasn't talking with people all the time. If I had been able to, I would have moved her into a senior community where all her girlfriends were. And every time we'd go over there to visit them, they were playing cards, they were laughing, they were talking about a movie they had just gone to. My mom's last 20 years or so of her life would have been very different if I had gotten her over there, but she wouldn't leave my brother, and my brother smoked, and no community would take him. Mm. So I kind of had my hands tied behind my back. But that's like my only really regret in life was that, because I kind of watched her, you know, put down all the, I think I say in the book, she put down her travel books and picked up her TV guide and sat in front of the TV and didn't have, they say that there are three things that will, that will depend on how successfully you age. Three things.
Okay.
Number one, social engagement. That's staying engaged in life.
And your brain.
And you're talking. Number two, social connections. And that's having friends, not just the daughter that comes over and takes care of you, but friends so that you wake up in the morning and you think, God, I can't wait to call so-and-so or this one and talk about blah, blah, blah. It's getting together with them so that you interact with another person. And so you care about someone else and you know that someone else cares about you. And the third thing, believe it or not, is not your finances. It is your sense of purpose. And that doesn't mean that you have to go start a philanthropic, you know, organization. It can be something as simple as, you know, a garden that you planted that needs you to get up and go out and take care of it. But I got to tell you, every time I ever go into the local hospital here in Greenwich, Connecticut, the first thing you see is this little area with all these older people who volunteer at the hospital. They're always laughing. They are the happiest group of people. And it's because they have a sense of purpose. I've talked to them about it. And they said, are you kidding? We take flowers up to people. We take teddy bears. We take them down as they're leaving the hospitals with their new babies, or they've had their, you know, hip replaced, whatever it is. They're happy they're leaving. I mean, we can take a lesson from them. You know, what are they doing? They're staying engaged. They have social connections with the people. And they have a sense of purpose, like a real sense of purpose. So, you know, to me, those were my little gurus in that area of life. But those are the three things. And I say to people as they're getting older, you know, I have my husband's aunt, and she's in her 80s. And we talked about it when her husband died. She went and joined a Weight Watchers group. Not that she really needed to lose a lot of weight, but she's friends with all of them there. And now they're even getting together on Zoom, and she plays a card game with this one. And she knew, she took some classes. That's what you do. Like, you have to look for ways to stay engaged with other people.
And it also keeps you active. And that's a big part of it too.
Yeah.
Because we know sitting is the new smoking. And if you're sedentary, that's not good for any part of your body. So It forces you to get up and get out, even if it's to get up and go to the mailbox and say hello to a neighbor or get to the phone instead of just sitting.
And of course, that's been an issue during this pandemic. I mean, there's so many people that have been sedentary. I don't know how many people have told me that they've gained 10, 15 pounds. And, you know, a lot of them are like really depressed.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, at least we thank God somebody invented Zoom.
Right.
Is Zoom a verb now? Like, I'm Zooming with you right now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the new heroes in our lives, I think, are IT people.
Yes. Well, I have four IT people in my house that are 15 and 17 years old. If something doesn't work, I just call them. And
so you, in your first marriage, you have three daughters. And Then you decided that was fun. Let's do it again. And so tell us about, because you have seven children.
Yes. So my three older daughters, anybody who watched me on Good Morning America, you know, you saw me. I was practically on set minutes before delivery. And then, so that's the first three, and they're all in their 30s now, all married, and two of them have kids, two little children, and they all call me JoJo.
Of course.
Yeah.
There's grandma in you. I'm just saying. No, so, the grandmother.
So it all came about because Lindsay, who is the first to have a child, and she's married to Evan, the wonderful, wonderful guy. And he actually went to my husband's summer camp. My husband's, for his bit line of business, he owns summer camps for children up in Maine.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so that's why I figured four teenagers in the house was like,
not a big deal.
No big deal, you know? So Evan's mom, Louise, she called me and she said, I don't think I want to be called grandma. So I'm Louise. I'm going to be Lulu. You're Joan. You can be JoJo. I said, deal.
I like that.
So cute. And they say, hi, JoJo. So I'm JoJo.
See, yeah. I love that. I love the way you think. Yeah. That's just great. Because you know what? We do tend to think grandma old, right? And no offense to people who like grandma. You know, you've earned that. Yeah. But sometimes we just want to be, you know, young and hip.
Yeah, JoJo.
You're listening to journalist, author, and television host, Joan London, whose new book is Why Did I Come Into This Room? a candid conversation about aging. She's joined in conversation by journalist Holly Furfer on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
You know, it's interesting because when I married my husband, Jeff, and we had the first set of twins, and I met him when I was 45. It was just before I was 50 that we got married and had the first set. And my older girls were there in the hospital because I used a surrogate. I mean, I tried a few times and I kept losing. And I'd had three so easily, but we decided that, you know, you count years in dog years when you're older. It's like my husband said to me, this is not a contest to see if you can win and get pregnant. We just want to have a family.
But what was the reaction when you said, yeah, we're going to have twins, we're going to have another set of twins? People must have thought you were out of your
mind. They thought I was crazy. I think they thought I needed to have my head examined. But you know what? You know, when I got divorced and I was single, I was in my mid-40s, and women in television, they would set me up with people, and the people that they thought I should be with. And those were usually like high powered, little bit older, wealthy guys. And I would go out on a date and I think, I'm bored to death.
And
this is not what I want. I want a playmate. I want somebody who's going to play tennis with me and who's going to have fun. And I kind of missed, with all the girls going off to college at that point, that little sound of like little footsteps running down the hall.
Oh my gosh.
So I was all in. And I got to tell you, yeah, it's a lot of work. But even today, like, I love it. You know, I look around, I go to the football games, I go to the soccer games. My Kim plays volleyball. My daughter, Kate, she's the captain of the soccer team, captain of the tennis team. And I go to all these things and I become a real fan. You know, sometimes my husband will look at me like with that arched eyebrow, like, yes. You're going to get thrown out of here. But it's fun. And you know, I got to tell you, I look around at the other women around me. I know I'm discernibly older than them, but I don't feel like we look that different.
No, you really don't. And you know what? Also, it's attitude, because I know people who are in their 30s or 40s, and I look at them and I think, you're like 90. What are you, 90? Get off the couch.
And I'm telling you, I wouldn't call them out by name, but I think there are a few of them there that I don't even know if they're 40. And I do say that they might even look a little older than me.
Ha. Do you?
I'm gonna lay it out here.
Yeah,
I just turned 70.
You wait. Say that again.
I just turned 70. No, September the 19th. I turned 70. Oh, now I must admit, it seems like it happened in an altered universe over there.
I get you. I hear you.
Because I go by the mirror and I think, all right, I guess I am, but.
This is why we love you, because you make 70 so amazing, because I don't feel like, you know, exactly. Like, I look at you and go, oh yeah, that's the way it should be done. And I hope I can do it. But, and I'm not too far behind you, believe it or not. People always look at me and they go, oh, are you in your 30s? No, I'm 53. I'll be 54 in a few months. I get it. I totally get it. But you know what? I think nowadays it's more acceptable. People are, you know, before people go, oh, don't tell anybody how old I am. Don't do this. You know, who cares? I think,
I was that way for a while.
But and for books like this, though, it's because, you know, hey, so what? So I look.
I wanted that. I wanted to get that across.
Yeah.
So I did.
Definitely did. And do you feel like having though four toddlers in your 50s and, you know, running around, do you think that kept you young?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I had a party at my house, and like the newborn, the little ones, the younger ones were really little, and the older ones were toddlers running around like little maniacs. And all these high powered alpha female girlfriends of mine came in and they looked at this and this chaos and said, oh my God, I'm exhausted just looking at this. But listen, 2 hours earlier, the caterers had arrived for the party, and they were all French. Those women came in and they looked at the exact same thing and they said, "Oh, you will never grow old."
See? And they were right.
And I was so struck by that, that two sets of eyes could look at exactly the same thing. And one would see it as exhausting and the other would see it as exhilarating.
I love
and
that.
And that kind of just shows you how, you know, how we see things in life. It makes such a big difference.
Attitude.
I see myself as an old person. And I'm telling you, I plan on still being engaged and doing things in my 80s.
And
I just keep accepting new challenges, new fun things.
You don't sit down. You do so much. One of the things that I also like that you, so, and also for people to know that you are a journalist, so you do a lot of research. And I really enjoy, you know, when you say, you make a statement, you back it up with science and it makes it understandable. Oh, I see how that could be like that. We think genetics is like this, but it's really this. And I love the fact that you, I'm just going to say it, you go there when it comes to the female anatomy and female issues as we age. And, you know, I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable who may not be ready for it, but that you're just so open and honest about it, because it does sort of take away that taboo, like, oh, I can't talk about that. I can't.
We have to talk about these things. I remember one day, I'm in my home office right now, and you have to walk through this room to get to our bedroom. So my husband walked in one day, and I was like always at my laptop all the time when I was writing the book, and I'm always there anyway, working on something. And he said, "What are you working on today, honey?" And I looked up and I said, "Leaky bladders." He said, "Oh God," he said, "but you can't say that." I said, "What?" I said, "As a matter of fact, that chapter title is, I laugh so hard, tears roll down my leg." And he gives me that arched eyebrow. And I said, "Sweetie, my last chapter in this book is, I want to be cremated. It's my last chance for a smoking hot body." And he gives me that arched eyebrow, like, "Are you sure you should be doing this book?" I said, "These are girls. They're my sisters. They're other females. And this, I don't want to be like pontificating to them. I want to be having a conversation with them and saying, guess what I found out?" Like, I would learn things. Like, I remember the day that I learned, and I talked to so many different doctors. And as you noted, I always put down all the
research
where I got my information, just so you know it's real. The day I found out that when all the estrogen is out of our body, okay, which can happen at really a variation of age in women,
right?
Your body, our female body, has always stood ready to be childbearing. And so we have these fat cells. Some have more than others, but we have these fat cells that normally reside on our hips and our thighs. And the reason why is so that as your belly starts expanding, that you're kind of kept, you know, balanced.
Yeah.
Well, our body is really smart and it knows when there's no more estrogen, and it says, no more childbearing. Okay, go ahead and move. And those fat cells are pre-programmed to move to our abdomen.
Wow.
And that is why all of a sudden, at some point in time, women go from having this felt little waist to all of a sudden, like, wait, what happened? Like, and I don't want women to beat up on themselves because they think they did something wrong. It just happens. Now, along with that, then we have to know that any fat above our belly button is dangerous fat. It can get into your organs and become visceral fat, which is very unhealthy. And it's close to our heart, so it puts you at risk for cardiovascular disease. So then I learned the next thing that was absolutely, totally surprising to me. One of the, you know how they always say, know your numbers, your cardiovascular, yeah, right. your cholesterol, your resting heart rate, blah, blah, blah.
Diabetes, A1C.
Well, maybe the most important number you should know is your waist circumference. Now, I'm going to ask you, have you ever gone to a doctor and had one of your doctors measure your waist?
Never.
No, I never have. And I haven't found a woman yet to say yes to that question. they all say never, never, no doctor has ever measured my waist. And yet the experts that I found said maybe the number one predictor of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity is that waist measurement. So I'm going to tell you, it shouldn't really be more than 35 for a woman, 40 for a man. The good news is that if you lose about 10 to 12 pounds, you can take an inch off your waist.
Oh, wow.
But women get frustrated sometimes when they start trying to lose weight, and it becomes much more difficult because all our life, estrogen and insulin do this really wonderful little dance in our body. And when the estrogen is gone, it's not a good thing for us.
Right. No.
It's not a good thing
for us.
Our
hair can show
you. It's really hard to lose weight. And sometimes when women are trying to lose the weight around the middle, they get frustrated because they don't see it actually coming off. Now, the good news is that the first weight that you lose in that area is the visceral fat.
Oh.
The fat that's in the organs. And by the way, that's the best fat for us to lose because that's dangerous fat. Yeah. You don't want fat in your liver and your other organs. But I mean, this is the takeaway that I really wanted to make sure that the book was just filled with. But at the same time, I wanted it to be fun and I wanted it to be enjoyable. And I wanted it to be incredibly candid. And I'm gonna be honest. I've never been quite this humorous in any of my other books.
Really?
I've been candid. But I've worked with another writer on some of the books. Her name's Laura Morton. And I called her when I wanted her, because she worked with me on Had I Known. And I called her and told her I wanted to do this book about aging. And she said, oh, great. I work with you on a book about breast cancer, and I got breast cancer. I'm not working on a book about aging. That was just her funny thing. But then she told me she was too busy. Now, that was a little white lie, but it was a really, really good friend white lie. She knew I had it in me. She said, write it yourself. This is your 10th book, for God's sakes. You know how to do it. And she said, and by the way, you're funny. And
you are.
You've got to be funny in this book. You can't talk about leaky bladders and not be funny.
Right.
And so I said, okay. But as I sat down at my laptop to start, I had to it's like, if you can't think you can do something, just fake it, you know, and tell yourself you can. Like if you want a page out of the Joan London playbook, it is. Whenever someone asks you if you can do something, just say yes, and then go figure out how to do it. I mean, that's how I had all of the incredible opportunities that I've had in my life, because I heard about an opportunity. And I got in a position for someone to say, you want to do it? And I'd like, yes,
of course.
I didn't know always how to do it. But you just you pretend like you do until you learn. And I wasn't so sure that I could really pull it off. And then as I started getting into it and I let loose.
Oh, yeah.
I got my humor confidence.
It was great. I felt like it was a stream of consciousness. Like I thought you were, I could just hear you dictating it into your phone and then transcribing it. And it just became a book because it is so conversational. I thought I was talking to you. It's genius. And I want to get to some questions because we have a whole bunch of them and I know people have some good ones. So it's from an anonymous attendee. As a breast cancer survivor, what advice can you give to another breast cancer survivor, because she is one, to keep the young spirit, which she tries really hard to do at the age of 67, and not panic with every ache and pain that just appears?
Well, look, right now, if I wake up with a headache, I think immediately I have COVID. tested. Nope, you don't. And I got to say, at the very, very end of my treatment, and I had very aggressive chemotherapy because I had triple negative breast cancer. So I didn't have one of the three normal breast cancers, if you will.
Right.
And back then, there was no targeted treatment. There is now. I mean, we've come so far. We've come so far in the 6 years since I was diagnosed. And so I had to go through, months and months and months of aggressive chemo and then radiation. I remember when I was finishing my last chemo, talked about it because I journaled the entire thing and put it all out there. And I had so many people say, thank you for doing that. You took the scary out of it. Because yeah. I showed them what the radiation machine looked like. And I showed them what the chemo thing looked like. But then at the very end, I started getting all of these people who were, you know, on Facebook saying to me, so now that you're coming to the end, how are you dealing with the fear of recurrence? Mm. And I wanted to write them all back and say, I hadn't even thought about it, actually, until you mentioned it. Right. And, but you can't help it. They put it into your head. So on the very last day of chemo, I remember I went in and my oncology nurses, the angels in the life of any woman who's fighting breast cancer, the unsung heroes that make us feel brave and strong when we're not feeling brave and strong. They warned me. They said, you know, last day of, you know, treatment is not always, you know, want to like send up balloons. It can be kind of emotional because you've had people watching over you every week, looking at your blood counts. And now it's like they open the door and you leave. And so I'm glad she told me because I did come a little unhinged. I went into my oncologist, who was just the greatest guy in the world. And I said, you know, I'm getting all these Facebook messages. How am I going to deal with the fear of recurrence? I said, in all honesty, how are we supposed to just walk out of here and think, okay, we're okay now?
Right.
And he took my hands in his hands and he said, I want you to follow the wonderful wise words of the great philosopher, Wile E. Coyote. He said, you remember Wile E. Coyote? He's the one that went off the cliff at like 100 miles an hour. Right. Well, he was never, ever in trouble until he looked down. He said, you keep your head high. You know that you took the best treatment possible and expect to be okay. Don't look down and get involved with what if, just keep your head up. And that's how I chose to walk forward in life. And I think it was great advice. And I really don't have any concern about, well, my triple negative cancer, it's so fast growing. If it was going to come back, it would have come back. But my breast cancer surgeon, who's a little bit more Debbie Downer than my than my oncologist, she said as I walked out, just remember, just because triple negative, like you're free and you're cancer free, that doesn't mean you can't get another kind of breast cancer. Oh,
lovely.
God. Can you just let me enjoy this for a while?
Thanks so much.
But it was good advice because what she was saying is keep exercising and keep eating as clean as possible because those are two things that are within our control. And, you know, and look, another one of the things I found out in my research and in my book that I was so excited to share with everyone was all the study I did about the brain. Because look, when you get to be in your 60s or 70s, man, you just want to keep your cognitive thinking. So, I mean, that's why I call, you know, of all the things, forget a leaky bladder, not being able to remember something, that's the scariest thing. That's why I called the book, Why Did I Come Into This Room? In fact, I told the photographer, I don't want some beauty shot. I want a what?
I loved it. And you know, you have the best titles. And I like this. Not only is my short-term memory bad, but so is my short-term memory.
Yes.
Like that's me every day.
How about why can't I lose weight like I lose my keys, my car, and my sex drive?
Exactly. The great unanswered questions, which you answer in the book.
Okay. But, you know, I think that the not being able to remember things and going into a room and not and by the way, a 20-year-old can walk into a room and not remember why they went in there, but they're not programmed to question it. But you're in your 50s, your 60s, you immediately think, is this the beginning of something bad? And by the way, experts will tell you it's most likely not. But that part of our brain that's responsible for all of our memory and the ability to call a word or a name, that's our hippocampus. And years ago, experts thought the hippocampus started shrinking in our 60s. Well, now they found out it actually starts shrinking at around age 30. And it just starts shrinking a little bit, light a little bit. But we can slow that shrinking down.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guest is journalist, author, and television host Joan London, whose new book is Why Did I Come Into This Room? A Candid Conversation About Aging. She's joined in conversation by journalist Holly Furfer. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So what I learned is that in order to create new neurons, it was also thought years ago that you were born with, like, I don't know, 300 billion neurons and that was it. And then they just died off. Now we know that's not true. Now we know that you can create neurogenesis, the creation of new neurons, but they have to attach to your central system to really give you better cognitive thinking. And the ones that you do with challenging your brain, like jigsaw puzzles, crossword puzzles, brain teasers. And by the way, it's much better to learn a new language, learn a new musical instrument, learn something completely new that you aren't incredibly adept at. Those are better at challenging your brain and creating neurons. But there's nothing that beats exercise. Because when you do cardio exercise, you pump nutrients and oxygen and blood up to your brain. And the neurons that are created by exercise are way more adept at connecting to that central system. And when I found out that my power walk that I do all the time, that it was going to be better for my brain, like, I couldn't find my sneakers fast enough. You know, all of a sudden it wasn't like, oh, I got to go out and do that power walk because I want to be able to fit into those jeans. As soon as it was about my brain, it was like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I got to go on my power walk. Absolutely. I mean, that to me, that was one of my discoveries that I was just so excited to share.
Yes. And it's great advice. And also, you also talk about food, eating. Our diet also affects our brain, the nutrients that we put in our body, antioxidants. Just like when a child needs good nutrition because they're growing, we need that too.
And also sleep.
Yes. You talk a lot about sleep. Miss, I used to not sleep very much because I did a morning show.
I know. Yeah. But I got to tell you, what I learned was that when neurogenesis happens up in your brain and these neurons are created, there's something called amyloids. It's a byproduct of the process of creating new neurons. And at night when you sleep, it's almost like, you know, a bunch of little handymen when I'm in there. It's like a car wash. And in deep sleep, the amyloids are washed out of your brain. If you don't get good sleep, if you wonder sometimes when you haven't gotten a good sleep and you kind of wake up, you almost feel a little hungover. You almost feel like
foggy. Yeah.
Foggy. Those are the amyloids that didn't get washed out. And, you know, when you start learning like the nitty gritty of this, it's so interesting and it's so good to understand. I mean, to me, it's empowering to understand how my brain works and how my body works and what I can do to, like, short circuit. And there are a lot of even medical interventions to a lot of the issues that women go through. So, you know, I wanted this whole thing to be a conversation starter. And here we are.
And here we are talking. Okay, so here's a question for you. Nancy Koppel or Gary Koppel wants to know how Charlie Gibson's doing. Are you guys still friends?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I got to tell you, I'm a very lucky girl that I got to work with Charlie Gibson for, I guess, about 14 years. I worked with David Hartman in the beginning. He was with me for about 10 years. I was at GMA for a little over 20 years because I started as a correspondent. And Charlie is just such an awesome guy. We were like brother and sister, you know, like if he got dressed, because he used to get dressed at home in the dark, and if he had one brown sock and one blue sock, as soon as we started the show, I'd say, take a shot at Charlie's feet. You know, like, we would always do that with each other.
I love it.
And we just love each other as people. And, you know, I remember there were a few times where he had tough days, and I'll never forget when TWA 800 went down out over Long Island. One of my best friends was on board, and they called me into the control room because he has a twin, and his twin brother was calling and saying he wasn't supposed to be on that flight, but I think he got to the airport early and got on that flight to Paris. Can you check? Because they weren't telling regular everyday people yet who they had, whatever you call it, with the list of all these. Yeah. And I came back in, and I mean, Charlie could just finish my sentences when he could feel that I needed him to finish a sentence. Charlie always said we were like an old married couple. We could finish each other's sentences, but we didn't have sex.
All right, let's leave that on that note.
But he's a great guy. We still email back and forth. I mean, Charlie now, you know, his wife was the headmistress of a big girls' school in New York City, Spence. Oh, wow. But his wife retired before him. And right as his wife retired and said, come on, Charlie, retire. Come on, let's like live, you know, have a fun life. He got at that very moment, he got World News Tonight.
Oh, right.
And I remember I went out to lunch with him to just say, wow, you got World News Tonight. And he said, yeah, but I wanted it so bad before, but not really now. And he said, they tried to negotiate with me for like a 3-year contract. And I said, how about just 1 year? And then you can convince me. Let me see if I still want to stay. But it kind of came just a little bit beyond. So he's retired now. He sits on a lot of boards.
Yeah, good.
So he's still got his, you know, I mean, you can bet he's doing things for Princeton where he went.
Oh, yeah. It's good to hear. It's good to hear an update because.
And I have to tell you something, Holly. Once a year, I mean, now, of course, that won't happen this year because of the pandemic. But once a year, every year on December 10th or right around there, the whole staff of Good Morning America from about 1978 to 1998, about that 20-year span, gets together at a certain hotel in the bar of a certain hotel in Manhattan. And everybody, you know, the email is sent out to all of us, like, you know, 200 people in this email, and it's maybe 150. Now, there are other places. They all work different at different places. Some of them are still in the TV news business. Others have gone other places, but we all get together. And sometimes it's like, who's that over there?
Right.
And then we all lie and we all tell each other we still look young.
I love it. Here's a good question for Fran Epstein, because I was wondering the same thing. Joan, what's your secret to gorgeous skin?
So I've always been really diligent. And I mean, always. I don't know if I've ever gone to bed without washing my face, and in the morning as well. I represented a skin line for 10 years by Dr. Murad. And then a company he didn't start until he was 50 years old.
Wow.
He was a dentist and he was a pharmacist. And then he started Murad Skincare at the age of 50. So, but about a couple of years ago, he sold the company to Unilever. And, you know, as big, huge companies do, they got rid of all the spokespeople. But it was a good 10-year run. I just always make sure I get good products. I think sleep, I mean, it's not just the products you put on your skin. It's the food that you eat. It's the exercise that you get. It's the water that you drink. And I was never a good water drinker, but here's my water. But when I started chemo, I fessed up and I said to I was working with a fitness trainer who tried to kind of keep me going a little bit all the time. Some days I would really not be able to go out and work out, and she'd have me just do stretch. But that's what part of the reason why I really got through my chemotherapy successfully, because I was in very good condition when I went into it. And she said, well, when I ask you how much water you've had today, I said, I don't know, maybe a couple glasses. She said, stop and think about it. Did you really have 2 glasses? And we lie to ourselves because we think we did. So she got me these little, on Oriental Trading, you can get a whole big sack of a whole bunch of those little plastic bracelets. They're thin. You can get like for $7.99, 100 of them in different colors. She would put 10 of them on my right wrist. And by the end of the day, I needed to have them all over to the other wrist.
Oh.
And it started showing me. I mean, sometimes it'd be 5 o'clock in the afternoon and I'd say, oh my God, there's still 8 bracelets over here.
Of water. So for every glass, you put them
on the other arm. And we were going for 10 just because when you're going through chemotherapy, you want your veins to be nice and plump and all that. But I learned real quick that I was a big fat liar when it came to my water consumption, but it taught me, yeah. You know, it really taught me. And if you're not a good water drinker, like my mother-in-law, my husband's mom, she really just never drank water. And she had to go in for cataract surgery the other day. And she went to get the little physical you have to get before surgery. And they said, your electrolytes are low. Are you not drinking water? She said, oh no, I don't like water. I never drink water. They said, well, the human body can't exist that way. So when she told me the story, I started texting her throughout the day. It's now 2 p.m. Do you know where your water glass is? Like everybody out there, the experts don't say get 8 glasses of water a day just for the heck of it. It's right. Really, really necessary. And that's part of having good skin. And then I also, you know, I treat it well. And it's not necessarily with the most expensive. It's just, you know, go into your, you know, department store women and like Sephora and places like that. They have people who really know what they're talking about. But I'm always very careful in what I use because there are some products that for the skin that have perfumes and things in them.
Right.
Yeah. But I take good care.
And I know, you know, especially probably in television, we put so much makeup on, you have to wash your face every night. And even my mom would always say to me, wash your face. And I will tell you the best advice she ever gave me is don't forget your neck.
Oh yeah. 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 When you put your moisturizer on, like go like this, go down.
Don't forget.
Now, I have like a little scar right here because I had, I asked my mom, was I like a daredevil when I was a kid? Said, yeah. You used to jump off the bridge, you know? I said, oh, okay. Well then that makes sense.
This scar, that scar.
Yeah. Because I've done all these crazy daredevil things as an adult. I went to Australia and I got Charlie to bungee jump with me.
That's crazy.
And a parapunt off the top of a mountain with me. And I used to do a show called Behind Closed Doors. I jumped with the Golden Knights from 15,000 feet.
Wow.
I flew at 65,000 feet in a U-2 spy plane. I did all these things. But when I was flying an F-16 with the Thunderbirds.
Oh, yeah. You know, when?
Yeah, when. I'm really good at a cocktail party.
I love this.
They said, would you like to take 9 Gs? I said, sure. You know me, like,
no.
Sure. Like, when am I going to ever be asked that question again?
No.
So what they do, I mean, basically you either do what I'm going to explain right now. Otherwise it meant you were in a plane crash and you probably wouldn't be here to talk about it. But to do the 9 Gs in an F-16, he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bank the plane that creates the first Gs. And then you're going to take the throttle. And when I count down 3, 2, 1, you're going to pull back as fast as you can. So that's not such a big deal, except that I went through 2-3 days of training in order to do this. All my crazy, what my husband calls my stupid human tricks. They said to me, you know, when you're in an F-16, you got to, if you're going to pull the throttle back or if you're going to eject, which you hope you wouldn't do, you have to keep your head back against the seat. And I learned the hard way why that is so important. Because when he said, all right, Joan, you know where the throttle is, you know, grab the throttle, I looked down. So when I did this, and by the way, we had a camera that was pointed at me.
Right.
You saw my head just snap right down. And I herniated the C5, C6 disc in the back of my neck.
Oh.
I eventually had surgery on it, and they have to go through the front, of course, to fix it, because in the back there's bones, you know. But I didn't get it fixed until years later. I went on one on-the-road trip. I first went to College Town, Texas, and we shot behind closed doors of firefighter training. That was the hardest story I ever did, because you have all the gear on and you've got these big things on your back and you've got this here. And I mean, it's everything's so heavy, you can barely walk. And then you go into a house that's completely black with smoke and you're down on your knees. You've got this big hose and they're saying, like, make sure you keep your hand along the side of the wall so you know exactly where you are. Right. I mean, I couldn't wait for that story to be over. It was so hard. And I went from there to Hawaii to shoot behind closed doors of, what do they call them? Vulcanists. They're the guys who study volcanoes.
Volcanologist or something.
So we like did all this hiking up and, you know, dipped with it. We had a big glove on, had this thing you could dip right into a lava flow. And as soon as you take it out, the red goes black. Then I went to, from there to Colorado, to where the Olympic training is. Colorado Springs, Colorado. Yep. And I did, I was in the velodrome on the bike, you know, like on the velodrome. Okay. Then I was in the pool where there's glass and they're watching your stroke. And then I was doing all these things. And I did I did WWF. I did wrestling, and I did that whole thing where somebody pretends like they throw you and you just like go over. Well, I did all the things you shouldn't do, but they were great stories.
That's
they
great. They awesome. All for, you did it all for your art. I love that.
But then I came home and had to have spinal surgery.
Oh my gosh. And normally I love that, but that's a good thing for a scar. Normally it's like, what happened? And I'm like, I fell off my bike. That's my scar. So like, this is genius. Joan, thank you so much. You have our hearts. Please just, I mean, please write another book, do more TV, come chat with us. You are yes. And here's the thing. I think that you need to make sure that you buy this for the men in your life because they need to understand what they don't understand. They'll get it after they read it.
And a bunch of men have gotten back to me on Facebook and said, I read that book after my wife read it, and I feel like I understand her so much better. I love that.
Perfect. Yeah. I love that. So thank you so much. You are just, I mean, you are priceless. You are just, you're an American treasure. And I say that for all of us. Thank you. And I also want to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. We will follow you. Drink more water. I love it. We're going to do this every year until you're 140. And then we'll
all right.
Break.
That's a deal.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Stay safe, everyone. Stay healthy and safe. Bye.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was journalist, author, and television host Joan London, whose new book is Why Did I Come Into This Room? A Candid Conversation About Aging. She was joined in conversation by journalist Holly Furfer. I'm David Kwan, editor and producer of the program, and Tina Pamintuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Roshanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. Thanks for listening.